Happy New Year from the ACLJ.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. Let me wish right now everyone a very happy new year. I hope you are able to, for most of you, take the day to spend with your family, with friends, a day of rest, a day of renewal, preparing for the new year in 2020. We certainly have a lot of work to do at the American Center for Law and Justice, and we already know that this is going to be an extremely busy start. I mean, it's a running start to the new year at the ACLJ, with a brief that will be filed tomorrow at the U.S. Supreme Court. We're waiting on when the impeachment trial will happen. Some of us may be involved in that through the president's legal team. We've got another potential situation at the International Criminal Court involving Israel. But first, let me thank so many of you who donated to the ACLJ in 2019. I mean, thousands upon thousands of you who donated to the American Center for Law and Justice. And then those of you who donated in these past few days to help us reach our goals. I just want you to know, we don't take that for granted. We don't take your support for granted. And we try to utilize every one of those dollars for a project that is going to push the mission forward, whether that is a case in the United States, whether it's a government affairs effort in Washington, D.C., whether it's a international persecution issue, whether it is a campaign that we need to launch, a grassroots campaign that we need to launch. Let me thank all of you who have supported and donated to the ACLJ in 2019 to prepare us for what is now, that we're in 2020, going to be a very busy year. And one part of this year, as we head into an election, this is now in the election year, and we're way less than a year away from the actual general election, pretty close to actually votes being cast for the Democrats in their caucuses and primaries, and finding out maybe who will be the challenger to President Trump. Let me just encourage you right now so that you understand the work that we've got laid ahead. Tomorrow we're going to be filing a brief at the U.S. Supreme Court on life. I mean, that's tomorrow. So while we are not live today on the broadcast, we will be live tomorrow. We'll be live on Friday. And again, so much work ahead at the American Center for Law and Justice. We've gone through that the last couple days. But we know that even, let's say, with the impeachment trial, let's say the president, you know, that goes nowhere in the Senate, he's totally vindicated, and the articles are dismissed. He's acquitted of all charges. The deep state is still hard at work. And we were one of the first groups not only to talk about the deep state, but to take them on. And we did it through taking on the IRS, not during the Trump administration, by the way, but at a more difficult time under the Obama administration, when President Obama, even, you know, during the Super Bowl in a live interview, denied that this targeting was even really occurring to conservative groups. And we took it all the way to the federal courts, and we won. We beat the IRS. And over the years, we've been putting together a documentary kind of to document this case from beginning to end. And the documentary is called Targeting Us. You can check it out at ACLJ Films, aclj films.com. It will release soon. But again, it's Targeting Us. And today on the broadcast, you're going to get a special preview of Targeting Us, this ACLJ documentary, which I think lies at the heart of how you defeat the deep state. Because the IRS, as well as most, used to be one of the most feared federal agencies in the U.S. government. Then we defeated them, and they've been totally reformed and changed. So check it out today's broadcast. You're going to get a special preview of Targeting Us, and you can find out more about the Targeting Us documentary on the ACLJ's case against the IRS and the clients we represented, all the times we had to appear before Congress, at acljfilms.com. And to stay up to date on all the work of the ACLJ, go to aclj.org. We'll be right back. Happy New Year.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Get right back to this special programming for you.
Ms. Lerner, why would you say Tea Party cases were very dangerous?
On the advice of my counsel, I respectfully exercise my Fifth Amendment right and decline to answer that question.
They knew they were breaking the law. They knew they were violating our rights.
There were some boneheaded decisions.
Out of a local office. Mass corruption.
Not even mass corruption, not even a smidgen of corruption.
It was the tip of the iceberg. It was far worse than even we expected.
The IRS has finally released a list of political groups it has scrutinized.
It was something that no one could believe our government was even capable of doing.
They have way too much power and no accountability.
Never before has the federal government tried to muzzle everyday Americans solely because of their political view.
That is as wrong as it gets.
Lois Lerner knew what was coming, and it wasn't going to be pretty.
We were fighting the United States of America at this point.
We accidentally stumbled into the corruption that is going to be and is the largest scandal in American history.
My name is Kevin Kukagee.
I'm Toby Marie Walker.
Tom Zawistowski.
Eric Wilson. Mark
Kent. Becky Gerritsen.
Kara Waddell.
And this.
And this.
And this.
This is our story.
This is my story.
This is my story.
I live in a little town outside of Montgomery, Alabama. Small population, mostly retired people, a lot of military people, and I was not political at all.
Waco is a very small town, but has a big town kind of feel because we're the hub of Texas, we're the heart of Texas, and it has a lot of charm to it. And it's pretty friendly. A little crazy too, but a little pretty friendly.
We had moved to Kentucky, hadn't been there that long, you know, a year or so, and we felt isolated, and we really felt like we were alone, that what we were seeing happening in our nation, that nobody else was seeing this, that we were the only ones that saw we were going in the wrong direction.
In the fall of 2008, when the bailouts happened, I was really awakened to what was happening to our country, and basically our government was mortgaging the future of our country.
People are paying for the government's debt, and that at the end of the day, and people were sick of paying that much debt. They still are. So that's kind of what sparked it. And we saw the first tea parties on the rant.
This is America. How many of you people want to pay for your neighbor's mortgage that has an extra bathroom and can't pay their bills? Raise their hand.
How about we all?
President Obama, are you
listening?
Jason.
You get people fired up.
Jason, you want to...
We're thinking of having a Chicago Tea Party in July.
A lot of people forgot what the T, the E, and the A stood for. It was taxed enough already. And that was what had really kind of generated this movement, grassroots movement, that was not partisan. So it wasn't just Republicans. It wasn't even just conservatives, but it was people across the country who said, you know, I've just had it with the federal government.
At that time, we had heard of other groups around the country, just people around the country going, they were going to start what they called a Tea Party, like the Boston Tea Party, and rebel against some of these policies. So my husband said, Becky, I know they're going to have a Tea Party in Montgomery, but we have a lot of older folks up here in Wetumpka. Why don't we put something on at the park?
You know, I've been advocating against, the overreach of government for a long time. So they kind of got it going over here, and then somebody had the bright idea, hey, get Mark Kent over here, he's all over this stuff. So they pulled me in, and then that's what got me started.
What got me into this, what brought me off the sidelines and into this, I can tell you very specifically, I'm a businessman. I rely on contracts, and when they were doing the car bailouts, President Obama treated the bondholders who had a specific position in a bankruptcy, which is what the bailout the car companies was, and basically said, you know, those legal contracts you have don't matter. I'm the president. We're just going to do this.
I know that when people hear the word bankruptcy, it can be unsettling. So let me explain exactly what I mean. What I'm talking about is using our existing legal structure as a tool that, with the backing of the U.S. government, can make it easier for General Motors and Chrysler to quickly clear away old debts that are weighing them down so that they can get back on their feet and onto a path to success.
And as a businessman, I'm like, whoa, 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 you know, you've got to have contract law. You know, if they can tear up these contracts for these powerful bondholders, what can they do to my contracts? And literally, that's what brought me into the fight, because I said, if we don't have contract law, if we don't have the rule of law, well, then we don't have a country anymore.
While Americans are finding ways to cut back, the Democrat Congress and our president have gone on an unprecedented spending binge, bailout after bailout.
The battle on Capitol Hill to respond to that proposed $25 billion bailout for the struggling big three automakers.
General Motors now has flat tires and a dead battery. But Barack Obama's ready to hop in the driver's seat with a $30 billion jumpstart.
Our government will be making a significant additional investment of about $30 billion in GM.
Chrysler is a different story. Not viable as a standalone company. But the government will give it 30 more days to finish a possible agreement with Fiat.
One bailout may give them 6 months, may give them a year, but they're still going to be sick. They need to restructure.
Understand, we're making these investments not because I want to spend the American people's tax dollars, but because I want to protect them.
Why go bankrupt when you can get Congress to bail you out?
This bailout business, Neil, is getting offensive. I mean, every industry now is looking for a handout. And the only requirement to actually getting one is being a failure.
A set of sacrifices from all parties involved. Management, labor, shareholders, creditors, suppliers, dealers.
Protests across the United States. Tea Party protests are erupting across the country. Angry taxpayers, or at least some of them, are taking to the streets in the spirit of the Boston Tea Party. People are protesting President Obama's massive $787 billion stimulus bill, his $3.55 trillion budget, and the federal government that has been ballooning by the day since the president took office.
Although I'm an attorney by trade, my wife and I are both homeschoolers and teachers. We teach both in our own family, we teach in families in the community. And it was out of that I was inspired to form an organization called Linchpins of Liberty, which is an American leadership development enterprise whose motto is to challenge the imagination of the rising generation. And we do that by mentoring high school and college students in particular in moral and political philosophy to give them a taste for freedom and the skills to be free.
I kind of remember almost to the day, you know, the light bulb flashing off in my head, that moment of, you know, clarity that I had to do this, because when Obama first got elected, I thought, man, we're going to give this guy a chance. He can heal a lot of wounds. I mean, there could be a lot of unity going on here. And the first thing he did was Obamacare. This goes so far away from liberty at this point that, you know, we've got to do something. We've got to organize. We've got to start educating people. So that was kind of the moment. It was like, boom, okay, I got to get involved with this stuff. You know, it all kind of came together at the same time. And that's when I you know, went to the group and said, okay, what can I do?
You know, the community was looking for some answers. And we're really not seeing any of those answers when you're talking about in the, you know, the people who are put up to be voted on by either party. We just didn't feel like they were speaking to us.
We put out a call just on a meetup at the time saying, hey, anybody else feel like this? Let's get together in March. And we thought we'd have a few people over to our house. We had tons of people emailing, calling. Pretty soon we figured out real quick, we were gonna outgrow our house. So we organized local groups at that point. And all across Kentucky, we had 8 different local groups that then met under the Kentucky 912 banner that were just local meetups that just came together. These weren't politicians.
We ended up with over 1,000 at the noon event and close to 2,000 at the evening event. So we were like, this is crazy, you know, how many people showed up.
We met on June 30th or somewhere in there of 2009. We met with 3 people at a Cracker Barrel and decided to have our first tea party. And it was too close to July 4th to have one when everybody was having them July 4th. So our first one was on July 11th in Ravenna, Ohio, on the lawn of the courthouse. And we had 345 people show up for our first tea party.
The meetings that we began having right after that first tea party, we began meeting every month, and we would talk about different issues, whether it was fiscal policy or the history of our country.
The 912 Project was originally founded on 9 principles and 12 values, or another way to look at it, a lot of people talked about it was the day the people were after 9/11, when we wasn't red states, blue states, we were united states. We were united on principles and working towards the same goal. And you really looked out for your neighbor, and things were about that local community. And that's really what we tried to get back to. Principles, values, community. That was the bedrocks of the 912 Project. And Kentucky 912 Project really amplified that in the state of Kentucky.
I am a teacher. I was a homeschool mom and have an education background. I love teaching. So for me, I enjoyed the research of what was happening, and then I wanted to tell others about these bills and what was happening, and we would provide outlets for people at the meeting to be able to, what should they say to their congressman? What are things that they need to be worried about, certain parts of the bills? And we were able to help them have a vehicle and to let them know we are with them. We are doing this as well. We are making phone calls. And I would show people how to make a phone call and, you know, give them a script if they didn't know what to say. And these were all things that just helped empower the people to be able to stand up for what they think is right.
Folks, we'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live. To learn more about all the work that we do, go to aclj.org. Again, we'll be right back.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Get right back to this special programming for you.
Outside the Capitol, a few hundred members of the conservative Tea Party movement called on Congress to kill the Democratic health care reform bill.
There's a Tea Party tidal wave, and we're sending a message to them.
What makes the so-called Tea Party movement so significant is that it isn't driven by any one personality or issue. There's no list of members or chapters. Best guess is that several hundred thousand participated in one or more of the protests last year. There's no one office or figure who speaks for the movement.
The government takes so much of our money, and I feel like it's just endless. It never ends. It's never enough.
The central message is around fiscal responsibility, and there are a lot of other issues that other people find very important, but the driving focus is on fiscal responsibility, limited government, free markets.
Tea Party activists from all over the state gathered today at the South Florida Water Management District's monthly board meeting. They came to show their opposition to Governor Charlie Crist's proposed $536 million Everglade restoration land deal.
The Tea Party movement is an expression of what I think is a mainstream, widespread sentiment in America that Washington is broken, that both parties are to blame.
This thing took off like a rocket. Like I said, our first meeting was on July 11th of 2009. Like within 3 months, we're taking like 7 buses to Washington. Well, you know, like you said, I'm a businessman. First of all, you know, people don't understand, for us to take 7 buses, I got to come up with $21,000 out of my own pocket to pay for the buses before I collect your money to get that money back. So what am I worried about? I'm worried about insurance. I'm worried about liability. I'm worried about structuring our group in a way that, you know, we can have protections that a normal business would have. I just figured we'd be, you know, a regular LLC. I figured we'd be some sort of a simple, you know, type of corporation.
These groups began to expand. Now, when I say expand, some were, I mean, they went from 10 members to like 30 or 40. They needed to rent a bus. They started to raise some money coming in. They wanted to put on an event or a speaker series. So they had to raise some money to pay the speaker or to rent a room or to buy some food. But also, if you're going to take a bus trip, you need to have an entity that can purchase insurance. So if anything happened on the trip, for anybody who's involved. So these groups, as they grew, they needed some kind of legal status. So they voluntarily, on their own, not forced, but voluntarily, submitted themselves to IRS oversight.
We decided right off the bat we needed to raise some money because we wanted to start a website and have an email service. And all of these things cost money. A meeting space, you need to pay rent for a meeting space. If you fly in a speaker, you need to be able to do those kinds of things. Everyone at the Wetumpka Tea Party is a volunteer. No one makes any money. Everything that is raised is sent right back into the organization so that we can further our work.
Quickly, people are like, what are you doing next?
What do you mean next?
I didn't know we had a next, you know. So we decided, well, we'll have another meeting to find out what people wanted to do. And we had a meeting at one of the VFWs, and like 300 people showed up, and they decided we were gonna do more things. I was like, well, if we're gonna do more things, that can't come out of my pocket, that can't come out of all of our pockets, we have to raise money. Well, if you have to raise money, you have to get an EIN number, because I wouldn't put it on my taxes and, you know, gonna have to go up a tax bracket. So we got an EIN and figured, well, we'll figure out what kind of an organization we're gonna do. And we got a lot of advice from attorneys and CPAs, and we settled on a C4.
It's real simple. 501c4, you can't do more than 49% political activity. It's that simple. And you know, and then what's political activity? Well, I learned what the word electioneering means. Well, basically what it comes down to is anything you spend money on in politics, TV, radio, newspapers, mailers, direct mail, those things are prohibited. You have to report them. There's limits on what you can spend. There's all kinds of rules. So we understood perfectly clearly what we were applying for when we applied for a 501c4, because we're business people. We read the contract.
So I mean, a 501c4 organization,
gets tax-exempt status in the U.S. because it promotes something related to the social welfare. It's something that's happening in your local community or in the area you live in, so it's a group of citizens. Ultimately, it's about an issue, basically. It can be one issue, it can be a set of issues that you come together to work on and agree upon. It's not specifically for politics, but certainly, of course, when you deal with issues that affect a community, ultimately, there's some politics that comes into play, but it's uniquely lays out how you do this without becoming a political action committee, without being keeping that tax exempt status. You go to the IRS and say, we want this status, so we will submit voluntarily to your oversight, IRS. We will abide by the rules. We will abide by the reporting requirements necessary so that we get this status as a tax-exempt organization.
When I filed our 501c4 paperwork, I actually filled it out over the 4th of July of 2010 because I was on call. I work in hospitals and I was on call, so I didn't have any plans that day, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit down and go through and get this paperwork filled out. So I got it all filled out, sent in, and within a couple weeks, we got the letter back saying, we've received your application. You should receive within 90 days. You'll either receive your status, we'll ask for clarification or more information, or you'll be denied. Okay, fine.
We had been a Tea Party group for about a year and a half when we decided we really needed to be able to show the government what we were doing with our money and to make sure that everything was on the up and up. So in October of 2010, we did apply for tax-exempt status. We sent in a complete application. Everything was there. The IRS sent a letter back saying that within 60 to 90 days, we should have an answer for you. So that sounded reasonable.
We just filed the standard 501c4 application. Filled out the required information, sent it in, and we actually got a response immediately back saying, hey, you're gonna get some type of designation within 90 days.
I realized we never did get anything back from the IRS, so we started trying to call.
I call the IRS agent, I write to them, I say, when are we gonna get this? No response whatsoever. We go all the way through 2011, and we want to file our taxes. We want to do the right thing. We want to, we're good citizens. We're trying to help them help us. Nothing until we get into January of 2012. And in January 2012, I received this letter with a bunch of questions. And as the first correspondence we had had with them at all. And it came out of the blue. We were just shocked. I mean, it just came in the mail. And then I started to read these questions. And that's when things really got interesting.
By that time, it was 2 years later, and we got a letter one evening from the IRS saying they wanted all this information. It was a 7-page letter that we all knew immediately was not right.
We finally get a letter from the IRS telling us that they will not approve our tax-exempt status unless we answer almost 90 more questions. Otherwise, if you don't answer these, you'll be taken out and you can't have a tax-exempt status.
30 questions, 70-some sub-bullets to it, a total of 88 different inquiries.
I do audit litigation for a living against the IRS. To me, that was like, whoa.
The letter that I got from the IRS not only was filled with egregious questions, but it gave me a very short timeline and a window to answer those questions.
I came in with the paperwork and I said, something's wrong here. I don't know what it is. I'm not sure what's going on yet, but this is something's wrong. This is not, they shouldn't even be going in this direction at all.
Support the work of the ACLJ. We need your support. We've got so much work at the ACLJ. Go to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
We're going to get right back to this special programming for you.
I remember standing at my desk, reading the letter from the IRS, and reading the questions that they wanted me to answer. And as I read through those, at first I was kind of scared, because when you get a letter from the IRS, you think, oh no, I'm in trouble. But I knew we hadn't done anything, but I was kind of scared. And then as I read what they wanted, I became angry. The IRS wanted to have names of all our volunteers, board members. They wanted copies of every speech ever given. They wanted to know who the speakers were, what were their credentials. They wanted copies of every handout we had ever given. They wanted to see every form of communication, whether it was an email, a letter, a phone call, every communication we had had with the legislative body. The IRS was demanding that we send this to them. They wanted passwords to places on the internet. Just unbelievable items that have nothing to do with the tax-exempt status. And I think that is when I really realized we are being targeted.
It was unbelievably disturbing what the IRS had sent out in these questionnaires to these groups. Groups that they knew were being led by private individuals without a lot of experience in politics. They were small. They knew that from, you know, their initial applications. So they would do the initial 501c3 or 501c4 application. Then they received these unbelievably disturbing questions. They got these follow-ups. And we realized there was a pattern of these follow-ups asking very invasive information and that was unconstitutional to be inquiring about to the American people. Speakers list, the actual speeches themselves, contents of prayers at meetings, backdoor access to their website. Not just what is your website, but we want a password to get into the back door of your website and be able to see what's going on internally as well. So not the normal questionnaire. They already filled that information out.
It was clearly coordinated, targeted, and they were trying to silence a voice. They were bullying people into giving up and walking away. And we responded back, and paraphrasing it, we said, we will not comply.
And it was the most overwhelming moment of the process because I knew it was, or I thought, it was one person against the entire infrastructure of the U.S. government. However, it was within 24 hours of me getting that letter that the same letter began to appear on the internet from other organizations similar to mine all over the country saying we're being targeted.
So that led to a situation where some of the key people like Toby Walker from Waco, Eric from Wilson from Kentucky, a couple other people start talking about this is more widespread than we think. When you get a letter like that, you kind of think it's just you. And that's what I think most Tea Parties thought at the time. And that created a situation where we decided to have some conference calls to kind of get everybody on the same phone call and learn what the scope of this thing was.
This was a lot of people. A lot of people were getting these letters. And I was shocked at the responses I was getting back from my friends in the movement of what they were being asked. And some of it was worse than ours. Some of it was more extensive. But then others were so egregious, they gave up. They never even fought back.
It cut at the core of who we are as Americans. No one wanted to believe that our own government and representatives in our own government would single us out and identify us and target us purely based on what we believe.
And when you start to get the pattern of how many groups in the country were involved with this, you could see that this was a plan, that this was something that was being executed, that this wasn't, you know, just helter-skelter, like, you know, well, geez, the Ohio Liberty Coalition or the Portage County Tea Party just did this wrong in their form and that's what caused this to happen. It was clear that there was more to this, but the question was what? The question was what and why? And what's the point of this? What are they trying to do?
We had a meeting and we pledged our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. I get a little emotional on this stuff. It had true meaning to us, and so we were going to do whatever we could, is what it came down to.
Folks, we'll be right back on Jay Sekulow Live. To learn more about all of the work that we do, go to aclj.org. Again, we'll be right back.
The challenges facing Americans are substantial at a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack. It's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line. We could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at aclj.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Right back to this special programming for you.
So we started getting calls, but just in the beginning, just from a couple of organizations that had got an initial inquiry from the Internal Revenue Service. And initially, you couldn't tell whether it was just a local situation, like a what we call a compliance audit, or whether it was part of a bigger program. So initially, I think it was literally two phone calls. And then what happened was, over a very short period of time, I'm talking about days, we realized that there were dozens, maybe hundreds, of these inquiry letters out there. Well, my first job out of law school was with the Office of Chief Counsel of the Internal Revenue Service. I was a trial attorney, and I also handled nonprofit tax exempt audits and investigations. So we didn't do the actual audit. My office did the litigation. So if there was a legal issue that developed and you had to go to court, the Office of Chief Counsel was the courtroom lawyers for the Treasury, for the Department of Treasury, for the Internal Revenue Service. So I had known the inside of how the agency worked, and I knew the process of what happened here. And it became pretty evident to me, really within a matter of days, certainly within a week or two, that this was a much more comprehensive problem and a much larger scope problem.
I believe it was our congressman's office, Jeff Morehouse, called me and said that the ACLJ had agreed to have a phone call with us. And so we set up a conference call. And by that time, I was doing conference calls with everybody across the country that had gotten letters. So, and we were all basically venting.
That's the IRS. How are you gonna fight them? How do you fight the government? How do you fight the IRS? And so a big concern of us was legal representation. So we may be right, we may be getting attacked by our government, but can we defend ourselves? So we started talking about, well, who could we talk to? Who could we even reach out to that might possibly do this? And fortunately, and I mean that, fortunately, Jay Sekulow agreed to join one of our conference calls.
We decided that the best way to handle this was, since these groups kind of knew each other and had relations with each other, to get them all on a call to find out what happened here. Get them all on a call so you know what took place and see what was the trigger. Was there commonality in the questions they were being asked? Was there a commonality in the positions they were advocating? Was there a commonality in how they were structured and what they were trying to do?
For years, I had watched Fox News. And of course, Jay is a regular contributor and guest on Fox News. And I had always seeing the things that ACLJ represented and the fights that they fight for people that are unlawfully imprisoned in other countries and Christian groups, I had always admired him so much. So Toby had gone through all the work. Well, then one day she called me and I was at one of the hospitals I was working at. She's like, hey, can you jump on a conference call at such and such time? And I'm like, well, I'll be on the road at that time. But if I, you know, call in from the car, yeah, what is it? She's like, well, we're going to be talking to the ACLJ and they want, you know, several of us on there to listen. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. So I left the place I was working at and headed on home, and I'm going down I-35, and I can remember exactly where I was at. And the conference call started, and Jay Sekulow comes on, coming out of the speakers in my car. And I was just like, oh my gosh, he's really talking to us.
I remember he was on the call, but he listened. He didn't even say anything for like, I don't know, half an hour, okay? And these stories are coming through the phone lines from all these people, you know, saying, oh yeah, they wanted to know what books we were reading and we want a book report. Or, you know, we wanted to know how many of your board members have ever run for political office, and we want their family name, the names of their family members, and if any of them have run for political office, and we want to know if they ever planned to run for political office. And you're going, whoa. And Jay Sekulow broke in on the call. And he just said, I'm going to tell you right now, we will represent all of you, for this. This is completely wrong. This is something that's, I've never seen this before. I've never heard of this before. And the ACLJ is going to stand up and fight for you in this case. And that was a huge relief, because until then, we weren't sure how we were going to fight back.
What we found out on that large conference call was that everybody was being asked the same thing from all these different offices. They were trying to shut groups down that they disagreed with. This was very, very serious.
At that point, we were scared. We were intimidated. To have an organization with the power that the IRS has breathing down your neck and threatening things is incredibly intimidating. For an average American, I mean, it was just like, oh, could they come after our spouses' jobs? Could they, you know, what's gonna happen to us here? We were frightened. And I'll never forget what Jay said when he said, well, you know, we're gonna handle this. And he said, I know all of you are frightened by this, and I just want you to know we've got your back and we're gonna be taking care of this and it's gonna be okay. And I felt like the weight of the world was off of my shoulders. I mean, I finally felt like I could take a deep breath and it was gonna be okay.
We actually was, I think it was March of 2012 that we came on board with the ACLJ. And during that time, there was constant letters that, as a small organization, we wouldn't have been able to put together. We wouldn't know how to put together, how to go through this process at this point. But there was countless letters that went to the IRS asking for more time, asking for clarification. Every month it seemed, or every other month, it seemed to be another correspondence going back.
They've got these new questionnaires to respond to. So we're doing that legal work as well in filing their questions and ultimately getting them approved.
Nothing was simple about this. Nothing. It was nothing. It was really complicated. So first things was to get them to agree to give us an extension, because by this time our 30 days was whittled down to, I think, 2 weeks.
We've got to find a way through this, okay? Because the IRS is asking these questions. You can't just blow them off. You can't just say, oh, we're not answering, okay? That doesn't work that way. And so it was a negotiation that the ACLJ did for us, okay? And I thought it was very interesting, because you got to remember what's happened in 2012. 2012's presidential election year. Okay, so why did this all happen?
I said, I would bet money that they're gonna try to drag this out until after the 2012 elections. Because as long as they can keep us tied up with this, we're not out holding rallies and being active and doing the things that they don't want us to be doing.
You know, because if they say no, then you've got an opportunity to fix whatever they say no about. Okay, why is it no? Okay, let's analyze why you're turning down the application. Is, you know, did we do something wrong? Are we you know, not putting the documents together right? You know, what do we need to correct so that we can resubmit? Or, you know, they approve you and you're in. But by putting it in limbo, what you've done is you've done exactly what they were trying to accomplish, in my opinion, was stifle all of the organizations.
We were fighting against everything they wanted. They wanted health care. They wanted cap and trade. They wanted to make government bigger and bigger. And the Tea Party groups believe in the Constitution. They believe in a limited federal government. And I believe that we were winning and we were making a change and we were a big stumbling block to them, and they needed to get us out of the way.
We had a group in Shelby County, Ohio, that I've had the privilege of representing this county for 20 some years now in one office or another. They came to us and said, look, we think we're getting harassed. We're trying to get our C4 status, and they're asking us all kinds of ridiculous questions. And our staff actually went and met with Lois Lerner. The oversight committee staff and some of our personal staff sat down with Lois Lerner, and she says, no, this is normal. We're not doing anything out of the ordinary. I mean, she just lied to them. And so we decided, you know what? Let's just ask the inspector general to do an investigation. Once the IRS knew that they were caught, that Russell George, the inspector general, was going to release the report and say targeting took place, once they knew that was coming, what did they do? Lois Lerner was giving a speech to a bar association meeting here in town, and they had planted questions where they asked her about this. So she tried to get in front of the story, spin the story, because they knew the truth was coming out.
At a lawyers' conference in Washington, Lois Lerner, a senior IRS career employee who oversees tax-exempt organizations, admitted that agency employees singled out particular groups for extra scrutiny, using keywords with political overtones.
They used names like Tea Party or Patriots, and they selected cases simply because the application had those names in the title. That was wrong. The IRS would like to apologize for that.
Yeah, the apology, though, was nonsense. I mean, you know, sorry about that, is what she said. For that, we'd like to apologize. I'll never forget that. Could you imagine you're being audited and you tell them, you know, I don't have my receipt. Sorry about that. So, you know, apologizing for unlawful activity may be, you know, good for the soul. It's not good for a legal conclusion. And the fact that they apologized was an admission of wrong. But all they were trying to do at that ABA meeting was get ahead of a problem they knew was about to explode, because we had punctured the balloon and we peeled back the veneer of respectability that the agency had at that point, and they knew what was coming. Lois Lerner knew what was coming.
The government's view and their response at this point was to say, oh, we're sorry, we acknowledge what we did wrong. Well, can you imagine if that was what happened in criminal law? The criminal is caught after murder, after stealing, and says, oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor. Okay, you're off scot-free.
Support the work of the ACLJ. We need your support. We've got so much work at the ACLJ. Go to aclj.org. That's aclj.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. The challenges facing Americans are substantial. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to stand with the American Center for Law and Justice. For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. And we have an exceptional track record of success. But here's the bottom line: we could not do our work without your support. We remain committed to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. That remains our top priority, especially now during these challenging times. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.
We're going to get right back to this special programming for you.
What started in 2009 in my living room with my wife and family, the long journey till October of 2017. That's when we finally got the settlement and the IRS admission at that point.
So we were in federal court to get the policy changed, to get the rules and regulations changed, that they were at least what they were going by, so you could stop these targeted inquiries. And we were successful in that. In large part because the IRS ultimately knew their exposure was great here. They violated the statute, they violated the Constitution, they violated our clients' First Amendment rights, they violated the right to freedom of association, they violated the right basically to freedom of the press. They were engaged in an arbitrary and capricious method of trying to harass people that they disagreed with, and we were in front of a federal court, and that federal court was not too sympathetic to the IRS. With everything they heard. So the end result was the IRS did the right thing by resolving the case with an injunction that mandated a complete change of the IRS nonprofit tax exempt work as it relates to issue advocacy organizations. It's one of the most significant wins in the ACLJ's history. To take on the IRS and win at that level is a pretty big deal.
And you look at Jay Sekulow and how many times he was on TV, you know, representing us and speaking to the media and making our case when, again, you know, they kept saying, oh, you're never going to win. You're never going to win. No, this is, you know, you have no case. No, you're just making this up. It took a lot of guts to keep pushing back against that. It took a lot of courage for all of us to not let people beat us down and make us want to just give up. And it was a lot of people were like, man, you know, this is a lot of years. I mean, I can't do anymore. But we persevered. And we only persevered because the resources were there. Okay? We only persevered because the ACLJ was there.
I know they put countless hours in on this stuff. I don't even know for how many organizations. I put countless hours in on this stuff. So, I mean, I know what kind of work has to be done in order to make this happen. And, you know, I can't thank these guys enough.
Say, we didn't have that voice. They gave us the voice. They stood up for us. They fought for us. They were that voice in Washington, D.C. that, Lori, they had our back type. And they didn't do it for political reasons. They didn't do it for monetary reasons. They did it for the same reasons we were an organization, for the right reasons.
We could have never afforded to do all of this. This would have cost millions of dollars to litigate. We don't have that kind of money. I mean, we were lucky to bring, you know, $10,000, $20,000 in the beginning. And then after that, nobody wanted to donate to us. So if we hadn't had the ACLJ there to stand by us, help fight back, and it wasn't just the IRS, and people keep forgetting that. If we didn't have that, I don't know where we'd be.
We couldn't have taken on the government, right? Jay Sekulow, obviously, because of his experience, the knowledge, but it wasn't just the knowledge base and the experience, it was the belief, right? We had an organization that believed in our claim, they knew that we were right, and they were going to help navigate that process to help us achieve success, and they did.
Where the buck stopped, I don't know, but I do know that at the time in 2012, 2013, a lot of Americans had questions. Whether they were part of that group or not, a conservative group like a Tea Party group or not, they had questions because, as I mentioned earlier, most people, when they hear the IRS, it's not the warm, fuzzy feeling they get. It's a little bit of apprehension. And so they wanted to make sure that that their church organization or their school organization, any 501c3 they may be contemplating or a part of, would not be targeted by this agency.
The IRS is a serious institution, and it should be. But it's one we should be able to trust because it knows everything about us, that it's not going to treat me differently because of my views. My religion, my politics are not going to determine how the IRS treats me. And we wanted to make sure that the IRS knew they couldn't get away with doing that. So, of course, the IRS people have this view of it as maybe the most feared government institution by the American individual. I don't think that the people feel that way anymore. I think if you ask people, do they feel that way about the IRS? They may not love the IRS, again, because you got to pay your taxes and, you know, money out of your paycheck, but I don't think it's the most feared anymore. And I think that's because of the changes that had to be made at the IRS because of our victory.
Here's the good news, is they got caught. You know, the federal government got caught going after conservative organizations, conservative Tea Party groups around the country. And in the end, it was the conservative groups who won in court and everything else. That's the good news, that the good guys won in the end, which is how I think, like, you know, in this country it typically works, and it was good to see.
The government has admitted and has entered into this decree, and they've agreed that it's wrong to apply U.S. laws against any individual based upon their name, the positions that they hold, provided they're lawful positions, which ours of course were, the issues that we espouse, or our associations, or even perceived associations. That's the first point. The second point is that the government has agreed that their actions, whatever they take in this process, must be even-handed and never based upon the applicant's name, their political viewpoint, or associations, or perceived associations. And then the government finally declared or agreed that discrimination on the basis of our viewpoints, right, that the government, in administering the tax code, it's a violation, a fundamental violation of our First Amendment rights, which we knew all along, but the government was denying, to treat us differently in our in getting tax-exempt status or any treatment under the tax code based solely upon our point of view. So to have these now agreed and admitted by the U.S. government will provide precedent, which I hope in the future will at least hold at bay when someone is tempted to do this again.
They admitted that they lied, cheat, broke the law, you know, and I guess that's the first time, in my understanding, that they've ever admitted in a court proceeding that that they actually did something wrong.
We had things put in place so they wouldn't do it again to somebody else, which is even more important. And the most important, that then becomes a precedent for that next group that comes 5-10 years from now. My 9-year-old, when she grows up, she can say, hey, my dad did it. I can do it too. And she has a voice. And that's really why we did this. It wasn't for me, it was for her. And that's truly what we won when we got the settlement.
This country is a great country, the greatest in the world, and it is worth any battle to preserve our liberty. And I think that it's important to surround yourself with like-minded people, to help others understand what's happening, and then fight and keep fighting and fighting and fighting, because we'll never stop. It is not natural for liberty to thrive. There's always someone who wants to be a tyrant and who wants to take our liberty. So you must make an effort to fight the battle.
And I told people when we announced the settlement, they said, well, why is this important? Why is this important? I said, because in the future, if any group feels like they're being targeted, ever, they can go to federal court and bring our case that, you know, the judge ruled and enjoined the IRS, said, you can't do this anymore. And they can say, they're targeting me because of my politics, and you gotta stop them. And that's not gonna take 5 years. That's gonna take 5 minutes. That's a victory, because it protects our rights going forward. How much better does it get than that? Particularly when you said, oh yeah, we're gonna fight the IRS. Oh yeah, we're gonna sue the US government. No one thought we could do it. We did it. No, I
can't stand this. Support the work of the ACLJ. We need your support. We've got so much work at the ACLJ. Go to ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org.
For decades now, the ACLJ has been on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. The American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. If you're already a member, thank you. And if you're not, well, this is the perfect time to stand with us at ACLJ.org, where you can learn more about our life-changing work. Become a member today, ACLJ.org.